Hello and welcome to the Toras Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Aviva Orlian and today we will be studying Shmuel Bey's Perek Dalid. So Perek Gimel had just ended with the death of Avner at the hands of Yoav. And although most people understood that David was not complicit in killing Avner, the right-hand man of Ishbosheth, and as we said in the last Perek, ironically with Avner's death, the people continued aligning themselves with David. But at the beginning of this process, there were still some people that were aligned with Ishbosheth, with the base Shaul. Certainly not the majority of people, but as with any political transition, the change of attitudes do not occur instantaneously. So Perek Dalid begins with a description of the mood of those people who as yet did not switch sides. They were still aligned with Ishbosheth. They were still in the camp of Shaul. And with Avner's death, the people within Beis Shaul, within the side of Ishbosheth, were really stunned. They were on edge. They were nervous. And perhaps were at a loss of what to actually do. What do they do now? They realize that Avner was the power behind the throne. He was the one that campaigned and got everybody around and unified around Ishbosheth. And now Avner was gone. What's going to happen to them? And in addition, Ishbosheth himself was stunned. He did not know what his next move should be. Pasuk Aleph, Vayishma ben Shaul ki meis Avner bechevron vayirpu yadav. The son of Shaul, meaning Ishbosheth, heard that Avner had died in Chevron and his hands became weak, meaning he felt powerless. V'chol Yisrael nivhalu, and all of Yisrael were shocked. Notice how the Pasuk is referring to Ishbosheth as ben Shaul, as if to say that the only qualification for leadership that Ishbosheth had is the fact that he was Ben Shaul. He had no other qualifications, highlighting what we have been saying, that Ishbosheth really had no power without Avner. So now, as a symptom of this unrest, the Navi is going to introduce us to two people, Rechav and Bana. These were men who were in the inner circle of Ishbosheth. They were from Sheva Binyamin, but they take advantage of this upheaval and of this unrest. And the Navi tells us that they were brothers and their father was Rimon. They had fled from their hometown of Be'eros, a city within Sheva Binyamin, and they fled to Gitayim after the death of Shaul, along with all of the other inhabitants of Be'eros. And these two men, Rechav and Bana, had been living in Gitayim this whole time, and the Navi will tell us further on that they end up murdering Ishbosheth. But before the Navi goes into those details, the Navi digresses a bit to introduce us briefly to a grandson of Shaul, the son of Yehonasan. And we're going to speak about why it is that there is this digression, because when taken in context of the story of the murder of Ishbosheth, it makes sense, as we'll see in a few moments. So Pasuk Dalid. V'liyehonasan ben Shaul ben nechei raglayim. Yehonasan, the son of Shaul, had a son who was crippled or lame. Ben chamesh shanim haya bevo shmuas Shaul v'yehonasan miYisrael v'tisaehu omanto v'tanos. He had been 5 years old when they heard about the news of the death of Shaul and Yehonasan from Yisrael, and his nursemaid, this boy's nursemaid, picked him up and she fled. But vayihi b'chafza lanus vayipol vayipaseach ushemo mefibosheth. But in her haste to flee, she dropped him, he fell down, and he became crippled. This boy's name was Mephibosheth. In the nursemaid, in her haste to get out of there, when they heard about the news of Shaul's death, dropped this boy. Now, we know in ancient times, if a king is killed, usually the enemy would go and pursue and try to kill any surviving relatives. Therefore, this nursemaid is looking at Mephibosheth and saying, this boy has a target on his back. We have to leave. So she manages to escape, but unfortunately, he became injured in the process. Now, there are a number of ways to understand why it is that the Navi is digressing and telling us about this story. Rashi seems to suggest that it's highlighting the weakened state of Shaul's house, that there was nobody really left. This boy was young at the time, and there was nobody left to take on the reins of Malchus from Shaul's house. And Radak similarly points out that the fact that he was lame or physically handicapped in some way, this disqualified him from being king. So basically what this is saying is that Mephibosheth, he is the oldest son of Shaul's oldest son, and he could not be king. Which tells us that after the death of Ish-bosheth, there was nobody to succeed him because Mephibosheth was disqualified. And by eliminating Ish-bosheth, they would in effect be cutting off the house of Shaul because there would be nobody else to succeed him. Now, Mephibosheth is also known by another name, Meriv Baal, and we see this in Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Ches, Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Uben Yehonasan Meriv Baal, Umeriv Baal Holid Es Micha. So Meriv Baal and Mephibosheth are one and the same. We also come across Mephibosheth a couple more times within this Sefer Shmuel Beis, and in both instances, David is assuring the safety of Mephibosheth as the son of Yehonasan. Because if we recall, back in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chaf, David makes a pact with Yehonasan as he is fleeing from Shaul, his father, that despite what may happen, he will always do kindness with his family. So this is the Mephibosheth that is put in here parenthetically within the account of the killing of Ish-bosheth, the current king in the house of Shaul, and we will come across Mephibosheth a couple more times. So now the story goes back and continues with Rechav and Baana. So the Navi continues to tell us how Rechav and Baana infiltrate the inner chambers of Ish-bosheth, the king, with a group of wheat merchants. So they're able to come in undetected to the palace of Ish-bosheth. And they ended up killing Ish-bosheth in his bed while taking his afternoon nap. They cut off his head, they escape the quarters of Ish-bosheth, and they travel all night so they can bring his head to David as a show of solidarity. Pretty gruesome, I know. So look, let's look at Pasuk Ches. So Vayaviu es Rosh Ish-bosheth el David Chevron. So they brought the head to David in Chevron. Vayomru el Hamelach, and they said to the king, Hinei Rosh Ish-bosheth ben Shaul Aivecha asher bikeshes nafshecha. Here's the head of Ish-bosheth, the son of Shaul, your enemy, the one who has been seeking your life all this time. Ve'itein Hashem la'adoni Hamelach nekamos hayom hazeh mishaul umizaro. Hashem has given you revenge. Hashem has given the king revenge today from Shaul and his children. So clearly, Rechav and Baana were opportunists. Seeing the weakened state of the house of Shaul, they may have been looking for an in with David. Rechav and Baana, thinking that killing Ish-bosheth, the only heir to the throne, and by so doing, they would eliminate the only impediment left to David's rule. So not only would praise be heaped upon them, but perhaps they would receive royal appointments from David as well. But the reaction is exactly the opposite. Just like with the Amaleki in Perek Aleph, who misjudged David's reaction and assumed that David would be happy with the news of Shaul's death, and the opposite reaction occurred and he ended up killing the Amaleki, here too David's reaction is one of anger and disgust upon hearing the news. So this is what he tells Rechav and Baana, Pasuk Yud. Ki hamagid li lemar hine meis Shaul v'hu haya k'mevaser be'enav. Do you remember back the Amaleki who came to tell me the news of Shaul's death, and he thought he was telling me great news? Va'ochazabo va'ehergehu b'tziklag. But I killed him. I didn't reward him. I killed him in Ziklag. Asher letitilo b'sor, instead of giving him a reward. And here you're coming and telling me that you killed Ish-bosheth in his bed, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Af ki anashim rasha'im hargu es ish tzadik beveso al mishkavo, and now you're coming to tell me that you killed a tzadik, meaning somebody that was righteous, that was innocent in his bed, beveso al mishkavo, in his house, on his bed, not even during warfare? Va'ata haloa v'keisha samo b'yetchem ubi'arti eschem min ha'aretz. Do you not think that I'm going to avenge his blood and burn out and eradicate the evil from this land? What were you thinking? You think you're going to ingratiate yourselves to me? The only thing that you did was that, again, you, just like the Amaleki, you brought your own death sentence. With the Amaleki, we can say, you know, Shaul had been actively pursuing David. It was in battle. He had asked the Amaleki to kill him, and he was still killed for this. David still held him responsible. Yoav killed Avner, and David held him responsible, even though Yoav could have had a claim that he was the Goel Adam. So Kal v'chomer, Rechav and Baana, who kill Ish-bosheth in his bed while he's sleeping, David held them responsible. So therefore, David has Rechav and Baana executed, and he cuts off their hands and their feet and hangs their bodies over the Brecha in Hebron, a lake within Hebron. He then has the head of Ishbosheth buried in the Kever of Avner. So we have Avner and Ishbosheth, two men who were murdered within this terrible conflict, were buried together. In terms of David's execution of Rechav and Baana, David as the melech had the authority to execute anybody who was deemed to be a morid b'malchus, someone who was rebellious against the throne, without the due process of Beis Din, which is what he does. He uses his authority to kill Rechav and Baana. Now, in terms of the mutilation of the bodies, this is clearly something that Jewish law prohibits. We do everything possible to preserve a mace and ensure kavod hamace. However, here David has decided that this situation was an exception, and this is a hara'asha, an exception necessary for this particular point in time. The reason being that there was an imminent threat that more of this type of behavior could occur in the future, that more bloodshed could occur. And therefore, David felt that it was necessary to hang the mutilated bodies for all to see as a very strong deterrent and a demonstration in no uncertain terms that more bloodshed will not be tolerated, particularly the killing of anybody who may have been aligned with Beis Shaul. David is looking back, and he's looking at all the murder and all the killing that took place. Asael was killed. Hundreds of men were killed in the duel between Yoav and Avner's men. Avner was then murdered. Ishbosheth is murdered. David is saying this has to stop. We need a peaceful transition. No more bloodshed. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmas Malka Esther Bas Tzvi Yosef.